Thank you very much. Thank you, Roger, for inviting me to give a talk here. I learned a lot, too. I see that it's very interesting that there are so many approaches to the same type of questions from micro, macro, finance point of view, and general equilibrium. It's really interesting. My point of view tends to be more micro and game theory, and so I'm going to present here joint work with Kina Fong, Johannes Horner, and Yuli Sannikov. And this is a work that actually has two parts. One part that deals with the question of bank runs, the other part that deals with the repeated prisoner's dilemma under private monitoring. And that joins the two parts with the common idea. I think today I'll just present the bank runs. Maybe I'll say a few words about the other question, the repeated prisoner's dilemma. So one big question that arises in this conference is the question of anticipations or coordinations of economic agents. And of course, coordination between economic agents is really important. And usually we think that the best way for coordination is to have some form of public information. So this public information can be market prices that are observed by all agents, shareholder information that's typically and usually even regulated to be given publicly to all the shareholders of company, even the non-shareholders can access the information. Central bank announcements are usually public. They are not just given, you know, to a pool of investors. That would be considered as completely illegal. And the typical thinking is that because this information is public, this really allows for economic agents to coordinate efficiently. So this coordination is really important between producers and consumers, buyers, sellers, investors, and managers. If you want to think of interest rates, so that people know what interest rate to use, even what interest rate to anticipate, or in chain productions where there is a series of goods to be produced to reach a final good, so you have intermediary goods, it's really important to anticipate the whole production, the whole chain of production. And this coordination is, as I said, usually done using public information. But in general, there is a strong advocacy for public information in firms, banks, governments. It's all usually considered as a good thing if all agents can access the same information. On the other hand, if we think of private information, so I'm going to think maybe here a little bit more from the point of view of game theory, but this is common to many fields. Private information is really, you know, at least it's creating headaches, okay? It's something we don't like too much. It doesn't mean it's necessarily bad in the economy, but it's very hard to study. And we know for one thing that this can lead to failures in coordination. So this is a classical example of the email game, Rubinstein's email game, where we see that if information was public between two agents, then these agents could coordinate efficiently. But if there is some apparently small departure from this public information, this small departure can be enough for coordination failures. Another thing we don't like too much about private information is that it makes things really hard to analyze in general, especially in dynamic setups. So why in dynamic setups as opposed to static setups? Well, if you think of a static setup, usually you would write your model saying, okay, this is the agent's information, this is the way they act upon this information, and we look for a solution of the game between the two parts, and we would use something like Bayes-Nash equilibrium. We solve if we can, and that's it. Okay. Now let's think of a dynamic setup. In a dynamic setup, typically the information received by the agents is governed by their own behavior, right? So the behavior is what gives rise to the process of information received by the agents. But this behavior is itself a reaction to their own information. Okay? So you cannot, on the one side, describe the information, on the other side, the behavior. You need to solve a full-fledged model where the two are interrelated, and that makes life a lot harder than public information. So in the field of repeated games, we have a beautiful standard paper by Feudenberg, Levin, and Maskin in 86 that analyzes what happens when agents have public signals. So they commonly observe a signal about what's being played by everybody at each stage of the game, and they act upon this public signal in future stages. Okay, and they show that the set of perfect public equilibria, which I just described, has a recursive structure, and it can be analyzed through dynamic programming techniques, basically. On the other hand, if information is private, well, we have some results. The latest general result is a fault theorem by Sugaya that kind of brings together all the techniques that are known in this field. I think the trouble with this paper is only that it's, you know, 150 pages, maybe plus appendix or something like this. I mean, it's really hard to read, and even though it brings positive results, the analysis is difficult, and it doesn't look like we can do without this type of difficulties. I was thinking of also a reference paper by Thompson in 83 that shows that if different agents interact and each agent observes something about the actions of the other agents, then this naturally gives rise to a hierarchy of beliefs. So when an agent acts in the economy, this agent acts because of private information about the state of the world, but also because of the information that this agent receives about how the other is acting. But this means that if the other one is acting depending on what the other one sees about me, I should care about what the agent thinks about me, because I can only interpret this other agent's behavior by factoring this in. Because I know that this other agent's behavior depends both on what he observes about me and his own private information. So this is a very complex problem that's a form of trouble. But, you know, maybe we need to live with it. So a few words about private information in dynamic environments. Well, it is important. It's not something we can, you know, just wash away and, you know, just decide to ignore because it's difficult. In general, agents in economies receive private signals. Not all information is public. And even, of course, if information is public, let's say information about a central bank announcement, maybe I receive it, but, you know, I don't know so much what to do with it. And an investor who is specialized in analyzing this type of information would get somehow much better analysis. So what I'm just saying here is that information asymmetries also come because of the fact that agents analyze differently the same public information. So the fact that information is given to all agents doesn't mean that they all extract the same beliefs or the same meaning from it. And someone here, I think yesterday, had a beautiful quote from Rubinstein that was explaining this. Okay, what else do we know about private information? Well, in some models, at least static models, this is very useful for equilibrium selection. So I'm thinking here of the model of coordination and speculative attacks by Morris and Shin in 98. So if you can kind of play with the information structure and decide a little bit yourself what information structure the agents may have, well, in some cases, the information structure would lead to strong predictions in terms of agents' behavior. Another point about private information, which is good, is that if you make a welfare analysis, in some cases, giving too much public information to the agents can harm them. Okay. And I'm thinking here of the framework of Morris and Chin. It's the same Morris and Chin, except it's a different paper. It's a paper that analyzes welfare when agents have both public and private information. And the agent's payoff depend on somehow how well they match a state of nature, but they also depend on a beauty contest component. So every agent wants also to match what the other agents are doing, right? So because of the beauty contest components, too much public information means that the agents will try to coordinate very much on this public information part, which is, as shown, a little bit inefficient. So this advocates, in a sense, in favor of private information, saying that private information is not necessarily something bad. And this is a static model here, okay? So the two Morris and Chin papers are static papers. And we want to move to dynamic setups. So just one idea of why private information can be good as opposed to public information in dynamic setups. If you think of a framework of cooperation, let's say a framework where agents need to coordinate on some action profile, and this is the way that that they cooperate. There may be two reasons to not to cooperate, say, or to withdraw from this cooperation. One reason would be that the fundamental of the economy is bad. Okay, so let's say the coordination is on some production. Well, but you know, if the fundamental is bad, there is no point even engaging in this cooperating activity. So agents would withdraw. There is another possible reason, though, which is that an agent may believe that other agents are not going to engage in this cooperation. So if you are alone engaging in this cooperation activity, then it's a loss for you. So agents would withdraw if they believe that others are going to withdraw. Okay? If information is public, there may be, and this is what I'm going to show in a model, there may be too much unraveling. I may start to fear that other agents are going to withdraw, so I would want to withdraw myself just before them, and they would want to withdraw just before me, and at the end there is absolutely no cooperation possible. On the other hand, if information is public, I would like to argue here that a form of moderation takes place. Even if I receive kind of a negative signal, even if I think that the state of the economy is not so good, I'm going to believe, because I'm quite pessimistic, according to my signal, that other agents are probably less pessimistic than I am. So I may still be concerned about the first part. I may still be concerned about the fact that the state of the economy is not so good. But I would tend to believe that I'm the only one in this case. So I would not think too much about the second concern, which is that other agents would be as pessimistic as I am and withdraw before myself from cooperation. OK, so there is this phenomenon we call here mean reversion of beliefs. Maybe we'll find a better term. Mean reversion of beliefs is simply a form of Bayesian updating. If you receive a signal, there's going to be a private signal about some state of nature, and you're going to look at the expected value of the state of nature given your signal. It's going to be somehow an average, a weighted average, between your prior and your signal. Okay, so your posterior would lie between your prior and your signal. And you would think that on average, other agent signals is distributed around the truth. So you would think that other agent signals are going to be distributed around this average between your signal and the prior beliefs. So beliefs about beliefs would be closer to the initial mean than the initial signal. And beliefs about beliefs about belief and so on and so forth would tend to go every time closer to the priors. Okay? So mean reversion is this phenomenon through which beliefs and beliefs about beliefs and so on tend to go back to the prior beliefs. And of course, this can only happen with private information, because in public information, beliefs about beliefs and so on and so forth all coincide and they are stuck in one point. So this phenomenon of mean reversion of beliefs implies that we can find some good cooperative events that in some cases are almost common knowledge. with very high probability. All the agents believe that the state is in this set. They all believe that they all believe it, and they all believe that they all believe that they all believe it, and so on and so forth. And this is due to this force towards the priors. That's the mean reversion of beliefs. One literature which is somehow related to this is the work on common learning by Cripps, Ellie, Maylat, and Samuelson, and they show the following. So they are interested in agents, just who are observers of a process, okay? So every day they observe, you know, something, stock prices, you know, anything. But they have a model in mind, so their signals are private. And initially, they have a model in mind, which is that the law of the whole process observed by everybody follows a certain law with a given parameter, with unknown parameter. And the question is, can they learn the parameter that governs the process? Okay? And there are well-known conditions under which one agent observing a process can learn the parameters that govern the process. What Cripps, Ellie, Maylat, and Samuelson ask for is more than that. They ask, can they learn that others have learned? Okay? And can they learn that they learn, well, can they learn that others have learned that everybody has learned? Right? And so on and so forth. So is it true that eventually, when you wait long enough, not only the underlying parameter is going to be known by the agents, but it will also be almost common knowledge. It will be almost known by everybody, and everybody will almost know that everybody almost knows it, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's much stronger than just learning. And they show that, well, under some specifications of the model, yes, this is the case, but you know, unfortunately, it's not always the case. So in general, it's difficult to get this common learning. There is no kind of black box that tells you, you know, if you're in a environment with private monitoring, you'll get this common learning, and you know, that's going to cut some difficulties. So, as I said, in this paper, we have two instances of the mean reversion of belief phenomenon. One, which is bank runs, and what we're interested in bank runs is what's the liquidation value of the bank. So that's the fundamental state of the economy. If the liquidation value of the bank is very low, the bank may just collapse, so everybody will want to run. If the liquidation value is high, then, you know, even if the bank liquidates, the bank is going to repay all the depositors, so there is no fear that there is any collapse. You can just stay, you can just leave your deposit. So this is, you know, really what the agents are going to be interested in. And this is exogenous. This is driven by an outside process. There is a continuum of agents. Time is continuous. Things follow Brownian motion. And players are impatient. They care about future discounting of payoffs. The prisoner's dilemma exhibits a similar phenomenon of mean reversion of beliefs, but it's a completely different setup. The item of interest is endogenous. So you have two players cooperating with each other during a certain time, but you know that after some histories, this cooperation will have to break down. And what you wonder is if you should cooperate, or if possibly the other agent already stopped cooperating before yourself, and you don't want to be the last who stops cooperating. Okay, so it's a bit similar to the bank runs example, in the sense that there is this sustained cooperation as long as the others cooperate. But here, the event is completely endogenous. It's not influenced at all by any exogenous parameter. There's only two agents instead of a continuum of agents. So each agent is has a strong influence in the process. Okay, with a continuum, each agent is negligible. Time is discrete, as most commonly in repeated games, and players are patient. We're interested in questions such as sustaining cooperation if players are sufficiently patient. Okay, this is typical repeated games analysis. So the two setups are really different, and we're just going to talk about this one. Okay, unless there is really time, but I doubt that's going to be the case. Okay. So let's move to this model of bank runs, unless there is or there are any questions. Okay. Okay. So here is the model. There is this is a process of the value of a bank's assets. Okay, y t at time t. That starts at y0. There is a drift g and sigma, which is a variance. So you have a term sigma zt, where zt is a Brownian motion. At the time tau, which is a random time that arises with Poisson intensity phi, the bank matures and liquidates. This is an exogenous event. If the value of assets is large enough, larger than a 1 in this case, then all the depositors are repaid in full, even creditors, if there are any. Otherwise, there is endogenous default, so not everybody can be repaid in full, and let's say some depositors lose part of their deposits. So initially, there is a unit mass of depositors. Okay, so it's a continuum 0, 1 of depositors. These depositors may withdraw their money at any time. Okay, so if they withdraw, and they withdraw before anything bad happens, then they get their deposit back, and they can, you know, they're fine with it. They get their cash back. But withdrawal is irreversible. This is a simplification. So if agents withdraw their assets, they cannot put it back into the bank. They just leave the project, if you want. What happens to the bank if depositors withdraw their money? Well, then they need to refinance because they need a unit one of cash in order to continue living. So you could think of different ways they could refinance. They could sell of their, some of their assets. Okay, they could also make a lending. There are different ways to think about it. But what matters is that this creates inefficiency. So the inefficiency is due to the fact that if the depositors leave the projects, this refinancing needs to be done right away into a market. So you could think of it as a fire sale, where the assets YT is going to be sold at last. Or you could think that there is early termination of the process. YT was, you know, some money that was invested in a project. And if this project was successful, well, it would only be in 1 year. But I need to terminate the project in order to sell the assets. So this is inefficient. You could think that there is adverse selection, so that the lenders or the buyers in this market for the asset are very suspicious of the value of the asset. So in any case, there is going to be a loss in terms of value. So the way we capture this is through a credit limit. So if YT is the total value of the assets, L of YT is the maximum that the bank can borrow in the market. Okay. So if YT is zero, this means the bank has value zero. The bank cannot borrow anything in the market. So L of zero is zero. And there is some value, Y bar, which is larger than one, at which the bank can completely finance itself in the market, even if all the depositors withdraw their money. Okay? So Y bar is larger than one. That's in the direction of the inefficiency. You need Y bar more than one in order to get one in the market if you need to refinance right away in the market, okay? So, well, what happens if the bank cannot refinance, okay? Because too many depositors run away. In this case, there is default, okay? And this is endogenous default as opposed to exogenous default, and that's a bad event, of course, because all the lenders who have lent their money are going to lose some of it, okay? There is a little bit of question of interest rates here. So the bank pays interest rate R bar to its depositors. This is the same rate as the rate from the credit line. And this is higher than the risk-free rate, which is what the agents or depositors get you know, if they don't leave the money in the bank. Okay, so we see that there are different levels here for Y. If Y is zero, okay. Y is zero here, well, that's you know, the minimal value for the bank. If the bank ever reaches zero, it just collapses, okay? Even if nobody leaves. Between zero and one, this means that if there is an exogenous default, then the bank cannot repay anybody, not repay everybody in full, okay? So the bank is called insolvent in this case. Between Y and Y bar, if there is exogenous default, then there is enough to repay everybody. But if there is endogenous default, meaning that too many depositors leave, then there is no possibility to repay everybody. So the bank has liquidity problems. And above this value of Y bar, the bank is fully safe, meaning that if everybody left the bank, then there would still be enough assets to finance the continuation of the bank. So what's going to happen, let's say this is the beginning of the process, YT. Should somebody withdraw here? Well, clearly there is no point withdrawing your money, because even if everybody else withdraws the money, there is still, you're safe. You're safe. You can always withdraw your money because you're above the yellow line, and you can always wait until we get closer to the yellow line. And in the meantime, you get higher interest rates, so why should you withdraw? No point withdrawing here. How about here? Well, I don't know. There must be some level at which agents start withdrawing their money. Okay? Assume that this is here. This is here. Here, agents withdraw their money. There is default. And we are at this arrow here. Well, you know, the process is following a Brownian motion. So from this point, it could go up. It could go down. But what we know about Brownian motions is that they tend to move really, really fast, right? Really fast up, really fast down. So if we are really close to the default line, with probability almost one, we are going to hit default. Okay? So if we are really close to the default line, it means that agents should fear that there is going to be default with probability one, and they should start withdrawing their money right now. Okay? So if there is default here, there should be default there. And this default level is going to move up. And until this happens, and you see this is public information, by the way, right? One guy screams, you know, sell, 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 and everybody hears and screams, sell, sell, sell. This is, you know, this is what happens. And at the end, default happens at this level, okay? Exactly at the level at which the bank is fully safe. So this is quite inefficient, right? Because if a bank is fully safe, there is no need for, almost depositors. There is, you know, no need for anything. It would be much more efficient if depositors could leave their money at least, you know, at the lower level. So this is the unique equilibrium of the game I described. So this is very dramatic. The bank is never using the credit line, right? It could, in theory, survive using the credit line, but no, it can't, because all agents withdraw their money at the same time. And everybody is repaid in full, so at least that's the good part here. Nobody ever loses money in this system. Well, that's maybe not too realistic, but that's a conclusion with public information. Now assume that there is private monitoring. Okay, so I'm thinking of my continuum of agents, and each agent I is going to observe a signal, which is the current value of the assets plus some random noise, which is idiosyncratic. Okay, so all these Z, Y, T are independent Brownian processes, if you want. Okay, so every agent I is going to observe this signal here. So what's going to be the computation of every agent? Well, given my signal, I'm going to look what is the expected value of Y, T, what is the current expected value of the assets of the bank. This is an average between my prior belief, y0 plus gt, and my signal here, all right? With weights alpha square over this and 1 over this. Okay. And this is the variance conditional on my signal of the value of the assets. Okay. I can also look at conditional on my information, what is the distribution of other signals. Well, conditional on my information, this should be centered around the expected value of the assets, because on average, all the signals are centered around the asset. Okay, so it has the same mean, which is really the important part, and I can compute the variance conditional on my information. So the bottom line here is that every agent thinks that other agents have less extreme signals than themselves, okay, on average. Okay, so let's look at the picture. This is the prior belief. Assume, let's say, I signal here, assume like this is the evolution of the value of assets, okay? On average, agents would get signals around here, okay? But if an agent gets signal around here, this agent is going to believe that things are above there, right? So this agent is going to be much more optimistic than his own signal. So there almost seems to be a contradiction, but there is no contradiction. What you know, the law of maybe Martingale tells you is that conditional on your belief, okay, the truth should be around your belief. Okay? It doesn't say that conditional on the state of nature, beliefs should be around the state of nature. All right? So this is what we have. Conditional on the state of nature, beliefs are much less extreme than the state of nature. Well, this is what my traders are doing right now. Signals are going down, down, down. But they are all of them much more optimistic than what their own signal seems to suggest. They think that they are all outliers. And they kind of relax, and they don't withdraw their deposits. Okay. So what happens? Basically, if the initial value here is large enough, even if YT is close to zero here, most agents are going to believe that most likely the firm is fully safe, okay? Because their beliefs are going to be much higher than their own signal. And they are also going to believe that most likely other agents are convinced of it. So they're also going to believe that there is no much risk that other agents withdraw their own deposits, okay? So this leads to a lot more stability than under private monitoring. So we formalize this with a theorem that if the value y0 is larger than, you know, some number given by a formula here, the bank does not collapse endogenously as long as yt is larger than epsilon, and so the epsilon is playing a role there. So what can we say about this formula? Well, if the condition is met, there is no endogenous default before yt reaches epsilon. Okay, that's the point. So epsilon could be really small. Another way to think about it is that for any path of yt, no more than L of epsilon depositors run. Because if more than L of epsilon run and the value reaches epsilon, then all agents withdraw. Okay, and we know that this is not the case. So when is this condition easy to satisfy or not? What can we say about this condition? It's easy to satisfy if the signals themselves are very noisy. So the noise of the private signals is given by alpha. It's alpha sigma. Okay. So if alpha is large, this is easier to satisfy than if alpha is low. Okay, that makes sense. If you have very little private information, then you are closer to the case of public information. And we know that in the case of public information, we have early withdrawal. If volatility of assets is low, well, that makes sense. Because if volatility of assets is low, this means that the path of YT is going to be very close to the trend. And you know, this is good. You know that there is no collapse in this case. So if sigma is small, OK, this term is small, this term is small, this is also playing in your direction. Now, there are other reasons why to stay in the project. You would want to stay to leave your deposits if the return is high. Okay? Of course, this is good news for you if the return is high. The longer you leave your deposit, the more you get this return over the risk-free return, which is R bar minus R. So if R bar minus R is large, this is good for you. And also, if the bank is unlikely to collapse exogenously, which means that phi is close to zero. And finally, we see here that this term is log L of epsilon. So a log is going to vary very, very slowly with L of epsilon. Okay. So that's good news for us, because this means that this is very easy to satisfy in this term. Okay. So the epsilon could go very, very close to zero. So this is what I'm not going to present. And no, I thought I could click here and it would jump. Yes. So just a few words of conclusion. We have here a setup where public information leads to inefficient outcomes. There is unraveling, and everyone wants to withdraw their deposits before the others. And at the end, everybody withdraws way too early. If we had instead private information, we have this phenomenon of mean reversion of beliefs. Then we have an almost common knowledge cooperative event And what is this event? This is that the bank is safe. It's almost common knowledge between the players. They are all kind of sure of it. And they are all sure that the others are sure of it. So that's a good event. And this leads to more efficient coordination.